Welcome to another Three Amigos podcast on the Scouting Post. This is Kirk Ludeke here with my fellow amigos, Dominic Tiano, Reed Duffy. This is the post-NHL draft podcast featuring a special guest to be named later, and also our breakdown of the NHL draft happenings in Chicago on June 23rd and 24th. We're also going to get into the specifics of what the Bruins did at that draft and our analysis of how it all went. And finally, we're going to segue and look ahead to this coming weekend, which is the annual NHL unrestricted free agent frenzy, where the bulk of the roster shaping goes down. We will talk potential targets and maybe even some potential trades, because the one thing that did not happen at the draft was the anticipated deals and moves that we thought trader Don Sweeney might get involved in. Didn't materialize, but that doesn't mean you close the book. So, gentlemen, Reed, Dom, it is so nice to have you. How are we doing from Ontario this fine evening?
Well, I couldn't be better on my end. Everything is looking pretty good up here. Dom, how about yourself?
I'm doing great, you know. Can't be happier than I am today, that's for sure.
Awesome, guys. Well, let's get right into it. I know the listeners are eager to hear and have the Three Amigos riding again, and it is, as always, great to have you guys with me. These things are so much better with friends. They're not the same when I just record them myself. And I call those audio files because, to me, this is the real podcast, having you guys with me. So I'm not calling the other things I do with audio podcasts anymore, because to me, there's only one, and it's the Three Amigos. So what do you say? Let's start with Reed. And Reed, you know, the 2017 draft was supposed to be, you know, one that was kind of universally hailed as not as strong as some of the other years. And that was the talk going into it. And then the weekend happened. And so based on what you saw, take us through your assessment of how accurate that pre-draft prognostication was, and some of maybe the interesting things that stood out to you in a general sense and in terms of how the draft played out in Chicago.
Well, for me, what certainly stood out was the fact that the prognostications going in were pretty well correct. The draft, once you got outside that top just about five, you could see almost anybody go just about anywhere. And I think there's no better illustration of that than seeing Timothy Liljegren fall all the way down from a full-time rank in the top three to going to the Toronto Maple Leafs to pick number 17. Things got a little bit crazy, I think, and I think that led to a slowdown in trades in terms of some of the bigger ones that we had heard talked about, because teams were able to get the guys that they wanted at picks where they were already standing. St. Louis, for an example, getting Robert Thomas at 20. I think the Bruins did as good of a job as they could have in the climate that they were in the draft that they were in.
What do you say, Dom?
Yeah, I totally agree with Reed. You know, that draft played out a million different ways. And, you know, a fellow we talked about in our last podcast, Morgan Frost, I'll use him as an example, ranked all over the place. Actually, I think I had him ranked higher than, you know, any of the public lists that I've seen. And it went even higher than that. So it was that type of draft. It played out exactly that way. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of second guessing, and that's just typical with a draft like this.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to me. One of the big indicators of this, shall we say, quote unquote, shallow or not as deep, you know, whatever colloquialisms we want to use, was when you looked at the number of players once we got, you know, out of the first, second rounds, third round, and we started getting into those middle and late rounds, and you saw all these guys that were not, you know, ranked or rated or highly recognized, these players that were kind of area niche guys. And, I mean, you look at a player, for example, like Jeremy Swayman, who was a good, solid USHL goalie, but he was not mentioned a whole lot in a group of USHL goalies that had a little more name recognition to them. And that's just one example. Another example is Minnesota high school players where you had a scatter shot of Minnesota high school players that were drafted later on, who when you talk to NHL scouts and different people at the drafts, some of them were kind of scratching their head going, well, you know, I didn't think that guy in particular was that much better than this other guy over here who was maybe named in a report. One name I'll throw out there is a Minneapolis area high school player named Sam Huff, who had pretty good offensive skill and was considered by many to be pretty much a slam dunk for, you know, late draft consideration. He didn't even get picked. And yet you get a guy like Nick Perbix, who was the fourth overall pick to the Omaha Lancers in the Phase 2 USHL draft, was not seen as a strong candidate to be drafted by the NHL, although he has those NHL tools, out of Elk River High School in Minnesota. Also, Joel Otto's alma mater, and I think Paul Martin, if I'm not mistaken, is an Elk River grad as well. But you know, Perbix ends up being a sixth-round pick of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that just kind of, when you start seeing these players that aren't really well-known, and sure, there was a ton of, I think, European players, and this will perk Reed's ears up, but a ton of European players that were like that too, were guys that weren't necessarily on the lists very high or prominently, yet they were drafted ahead of some other bigger names. And I think that's the biggest indicator of just how varied the takes were on these players between the now 31 NHL teams.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it right on there, Kurt. It's just, like I said, my feeling is it could have played out a million different ways and everybody would have been questioning it. It was just that close to get that far, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and if people were criticizing them, maybe for some of the players they took in the expansion draft, I don't think too many people were lining up to bash them, about what happened at the entry draft. They were quite excellent, and I'm sure when we look at least one of those first rounders that they took, I think our friend Reed is fully on board with Mr. Bronstrom going to the Golden Knights.
Well, that was a pick that when I was watching the draft with my brother, who happens to be a Colorado Avalanche fan, that you know, it was a big night for him, and I kind of sat up a little bit and cursed a couple of times that he went so close to the Bruins, but just out of our reach. A tremendously talented defenseman that can skate like the wind. He's got a big shot, great offensive vision, and he's not half bad in his own zone either. I think comparisons to Erik Karlsson are a little bit overboard at this point. I don't want to go anywhere near that far, but he certainly projects well to the NHL level. He's shown a lot of skills in the Swedish league. He could really be an impact defenseman. And it goes to what you were talking about, Kurt. Vegas did a real nice job with their draft. I think Brännström is going to pay dividends for them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I felt for young Brännström. He's such a nice fellow, but he was kind of wandering around down in the media area. And so I stopped him and congratulated him, and we were kind of making small talk, and he stops me finally and he says, "Excuse me, but do you have any idea where I'm supposed to go?" And I was like, not really. And just about that time along came an NHL worker who was able to get him linked up. But I did talk to Karen Sweetie of the Bruins, and she admitted that they had a similar situation. You know, when you're taking three players in the first round, you just run out of handlers to be able to escort these guys everywhere and put someone on them. And so she admitted to a similar thing with the Bruins in 2015, where she didn't say that necessarily they lost control, but that she could certainly understand how you might lose a first round prospect in the media area when you have three of them to account for in multiple interview requests, because they don't just meet with the print media. Once they do the scrum, they then have one-on-one requests with TV and other outlets. And so it can really get confusing and hectic, especially if you have three picks pretty close to being on top of each other, as Vegas did, and with some high potential. But anyway, Bronstrom, he is pretty undersized. But like you said, tremendous skill. And I think he's going to be, like, when you look at what they did in terms of, you know, their mix of players. I mean, you get a Bronstrom in the first, and then you get and you have Suzuki and Glass. Those are very nice complementary guys. You've got a power forward and then an undersized but ultra skill guy. and who plays with so much heart in Suzuki. And then you get Bronstrom, who's your small offensive defenseman. But then you get Nick Hague in the second round. And now your first four picks are just unbelievable. Like, Nick Hague, where they got him is, to me, terrific value, and I'm all about that. I was just leery of seeing him go to the Bruins at 18. But when you look at where he went, I think it was 34, did he go to Vegas? That is, I don't think you, that's exactly what you're looking for with that kind of potential. And then the complimentary thing as well.
Well, if I might add in one more, their third-round pick at 65th overall, they went with the Dane Jonas Rönnberg, and playing out of Oslo in Sweden. He's going to be on the senior team next year more than likely, appeared in 5 games for them this year. But 31 points in 42 games, and then 5-7 in the playoffs for the J20 team. He has an NHL frame, shall we say, and eventually should be able to fill out at 6'1", and somewhere around 175 pounds right now, I believe, at 18. He needs a little bit of time, but down the road, he could be someone that they bring over and slide right in.
Yeah, no, I'm all about it. You know, I don't know anything about him, but again, you just look at the value of players they got and what they were able to get and where they were able to get them. And man, I think, you know, it's hard to say we're talking about 17, 18-year-olds, but on paper, it sure looks like George McPhee and his guys, you know, did a nice job of landing some really intriguing players and just a mix of players. They didn't go heavy in one side or another. They just got a good, solid balance of bigger, heavier on the pucks, more physical, larger players, and then you're smaller but high-end skill, and you got character, and you got energy. And, you know, they did really well. I think the Stars did great with their first three picks between Heiskanen and then Ottinger, who's, in my mind, the best goalie in the draft. And then you get Jason Robertson, just an absolute steal. Everyone who listened to our previous podcast knows how we feel about him. Those are three potentially transformational picks at each position, defense, goalie, and forward, that could really get the Stars going and get them turned around in short order with the core they already have in place.
Agree, and I still think Vegas, top to bottom, nailed this draft all the way down to the 189th pick in Ben Jones from Niagara.
Yeah. Yeah, well, tell us about him, because I don't know much.
Oh, I just like him as a player. You know, it was a tough situation for a lot of players in Niagara last season, but Jones can provide some offense. You know, he's got good size. At I think he's like 6 feet, 190 pounds. He's going to get thicker. You know, he can skate. He can do a lot of little things, and I think he's a great pick for the seventh round. Did I lose you?
No, we're there. Where did you jump in? What you got on that, man?
Well, Ben Jones is a guy that from the OHL, I appreciate his game, and he's somebody that from the Niagara Ice Dogs, as Dom said, they had a really tough time last season, and it was to be expected with that organization because they build in the cyclical fashion that you usually see in junior hockey, where they'll compete and then they bring it down and they build it back from the ground up. Ben Jones showed a lot of heart in sticking with it and turning himself into a player that's really beloved by the fans in Niagara, and I think as he continues to develop, he's only going to improve. And as Dom said, this could be the late bloomer kind of guy. He's already got the physical frame, and he's physical enough and smart enough with the puck that he can really take his game to the next level this season, which would mean that the draft looks even smarter.
No, good thoughts, good thoughts. Well, on that note, you know, I think... we can all agree that even with drafts that are projected to be weak or strong or whatever, you now once those players are all taken and the picks are all in the books, there's nothing to do but now kind of wait and see how it plays out, see who does what, and ultimately, if the history is any indicator, even in a quote-unquote weak or shallow draft, You're going to see some players come out, you know, future Hall of Famers that are going to establish themselves. And so I think right about now is a good time to kind of maybe shift our focus from the general aspect of the 2017 draft and talk about the Bruins and what they did in Chicago. It was certainly a little interesting from the perspective of they didn't necessarily do what was expected of them, but you know, ultimately, you know, they have some players. So, on that note, we have a upcoming guest hitting our airwaves, and you know, as we move into this next segment, it is our honor to introduce him. And so, it is our pleasure on the Three Amigos to bring you Boston's second round pick, Jack Studnicka of the Oshawa Generals. Now, Jack, did I get that right?
Yeah.
Awesome. 53rd overall selection, all around utility forward, offensive minded, scoring forward, clutch performer, and all around Boston Bruins type centerman. Jack, it is a pleasure to have you. We're very glad you can join us. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right, Dom, I'm going to send it over to you and let you lead off and start us out here.
So, Jack, I just want to start off with your time with Bell Tire and a name Bruins fans will recognize and a coach that you had there. Can you tell us a bit about that time and that you played for Bell Tire and the coaching that you had there?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool connection to have. Torrey Crew, defenseman for the Boston Bruins, his dad, Kyle, was my head coach at Bell Tire when I was going through my OHL draft year. And, you know, I can't say enough great things about Kyle. He's, you know, arguably my favorite coach that I've played for, at least growing up. And, you know, I can, you know, credit him with a lot of the success I've had, you know, in the last 2 years. He's really, you know, rounded me out as a hockey player, but as a person too. He's, you know, he was really the first person who taught his players, you know, how to act professionally off the ice. So, you know, he's a great guy in general and a great coach.
Jack, I know Oshawa was thrilled to get you in the draft when they did the first round in 2015. And when you came into the OHL, you could see all the skills were there. Everybody knew that you were eventually going to break out into a star and likely go on this path into the NHL draft. But can you kind of take us back and talk about some of the differences in adjusting from playing at Bell Tire to going into the OHL and kind of what you expect the situation to be when you go eventually from the OHL playing in the A or NHL?
Yeah, the transition between, you know, minor hockey and the OHL is so big. You know, it's very rare that someone, you know, a 16-year-old has such a great transition. So, you know, obviously there was tough times going through it. You're such a big part of your minor hockey teams, and, you know, your first year in the OHL, it's more about learning than contributing. So going into my first year in Oshawa, you know, the organization was very patient, if you'd say, but very welcoming to me, and, you know, really made the transition for me as easy as it could be. I think, you know, again, learning to be professional off the ice and learning to be a professional on the ice, you know, the way you prepare for games, the where your head's at in the game, it's just, it's such another different level from minor hockey, and, you know, I can't thank Oshawa enough for what they've done to make the transition easy, and, you know, looking into the future, whether it's the AHL or the NHL, I know it's going to be a tough transition as well. You know, as you move up in the leagues, you know, it gets harder, it gets more professional. So, you know, it's something, you know, it's a task I'm looking forward to work for. But, you know, Red was saying that I'm, you know, happy in Oshawa right now and ready to take on a bigger role next year.
So, Jack, I'm going to read from you a scouting report on you, and, you know, when you read it, it really kind of maybe gets to the heart of why the Bruins were so quick to jump on you in the second round. I'd like you just to kind of maybe address some of these points and talk about, you know, how, you know, at what point have these always been a part of your game, or are these things something that you've kind of developed over time? So let me read it to you and let me know if you think we got it right. This is from the Redline report earlier this season, and it says, calm disposition never rushes a play if outlet fails to present itself cycling back into space. Showed up to scoring areas on second wave of rush. Team-oriented and well-coached. Tracks well on the forecheck, skating defenders into compromising positions.
Yeah, you mentioned patience at the start of that scouting report, and it's something, you know, I've always relied on. I think my biggest attribute is my patience, or, you know, my playmaking abilities. You mentioned passing, so, you know, it's something I've always took pride in, is being a calm player, being able to be trusted in big situations. You know, you mentioned the forecheck and tracking well, and, you know, it's something in my game. I like to be a well-rounded player. I don't like to have, you know, one word describe me. I like to be very versatile. I like to be, you know, a coach's dream, someone that will, you know, get the job done regardless of the situation he's put into. So I think, you know, that scouting report, it's pretty spot on.
Well, good. Yeah, I know that scouting report, believe it or not, came from what you did in Calgary last year at summer camp. So it's a bit dated. It's almost a year old. But as I looked at your report at the end of the season and all the things you did, whether we're talking the season in the OHL and then when you heated up in the playoffs and then, you know, you went on to the under-18s, I mean, it all sounds like you've stayed true to who you are as a player and the way you're described. So, again, congratulations on a successful season and making it to the second round. I'm going to pitch it back over to Dom for his next question.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the scouter report because, Jack, I've seen you play a lot over the last 2 years. And this year, you really took it to the next level after the team traded away Anthony Cirelli and Mitch Van de Sampel, and you were given more opportunity to produce, and you did just that. Now, the scouting report people read on you, I can't argue one bit, but here's the question I'm going to throw at you. Do you feel now that you're at the point, because I believe you honestly have a great shot, it's underrated in some circles, do you think now that you have to play more selfish and take the opportunity to shoot more when it presents itself, to throw defenses on their heels and sort of make them question what you're about to do next?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. You know, throughout my whole hockey career, I've kind of been pinned as a pass-first type player, maybe someone who has to shoot more, definitely. But, you know, I think strength this summer, and, you know, I think that's going to give me confidence with my shot to use it more. I think, you know, like I've said before, I think of myself as a playmaker, but when the opportunity presents itself and the shot there, I think I do have to start taking it a little bit more.
Is it true you had 3 goals and no helpers at the U18s, or did I misread that?
No, that's true.
So there you go, right? You're already starting the transformation. No, balance is key. I know your coaches will want you to balance your offense as much as possible, but it looks good to me. I mean, if someone hadn't seen you play, those are some pretty respectable numbers. Reed, what would you like to follow up with?
Well, Jack, I kind of want to go to your mindset coming in and sort of out of the draft. You had to know that you were going to be a fairly high pick. You've got the pedigree. You've got the skills. Tremendously talented player. And I've said that during games where the Oshawa Generals have been in Hamilton. You're a lot of fun to watch on the ice. But when you hear your name called by an organization like the Boston Bruins, with all the history involved, the original six, the great players that have come through the organization, what does something like that mean to you to see not just a team, but a team with that kind of history step up to the plate and say, this is our guy, we want Jack?
Yeah, I don't think you can say enough good things about the Bruins organization. Like you said, it's an original 16. It's been along for quite some time, and I think, you know, that speaks volumes to this team and the fan base that they've been able able to keep a team there for so long. But, you know, it's arguably one of the best sports cities in America. So it's something I'm really looking forward to be a part of. And, you know, when I heard them call my name, I kind of just hugged my family. And, you know, I didn't really kick in. So, you know, about 2 hours later, right, when I got back to my hotel room, I sat down and, you know, kind of thought, like, what just happened? It was kind of a whirlwind. It was a, you know, really, really exciting time where it was, you know, I didn't really realize what was going on until I was, you know, by myself and was able to reflect on it, but definitely a very special moment.
Now, to kind of piggyback on it a little bit, you're going into an organization that currently at the center position, Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, David Backes, although he's playing more wing at the moment. Those are some very good centermen to be able to come in and learn from. Is that something that you're excited about getting into the Bruin organization and getting to go up and talk to those guys and see what they do every day to make themselves into the players they are?
Yeah, 100%. I think at the end of the day, the goal is, you know, to be a centerman in the National Hockey League and, you know, to be there at camp with people who have accomplished that already. I think it's going to be huge. You know, I'm looking to lean on them to kind of, you know, get pointers and learn different things and take advice in, whether it's, you know, talking to the centermen or talking to the coaches and management. But I'm definitely open to any advice that, you know, anyone wants to give, and we'll definitely seek some myself.
Now, you talked about being surrounded by family. Can you talk to us a little bit about, I mean, I understand you come from a hockey family, your dad, you've got some siblings that, you know, play, and just kind of talk about how instrumental they've been in your development over the years to help you get to where you are today, a second-round pick and a legitimate NHL prospect now.
Yeah, I definitely come from a hockey family. My dad played hockey his whole life. He attended University of Maine. He played NCAA there. And then the first person to kind of take off where he left off was my brother. He had a very successful OHL career, primarily played with Ottawa. You know, he had a really good career, as if he was thought as a leader everywhere he went. So being around him, someone who was thought of as a leader from, you know, many organizations, was definitely big. He played a big part in, you know, teaching me to be as professional as I can, teaching me to be respectful and, you know, be a leader in the locker room. But at the same time, there's not a game that goes by that he doesn't text me after. And, you know, I still, like I said, I'm a big guy for advice. And, you know, whenever he has some, you know, I definitely listen and take it in. So I'd say my brother and my dad were definitely huge influences on hockey, and definitely credit to them of where I've ended up today.
Now, did your dad take you guys when you were younger to New England at all, given his ties at Orono and being a former Black Bear, or is this all kind of new territory for you as you're getting ready to have an opportunity to play in the most recognized, the biggest city and the most recognized one in that New England region?
I've never been to Boston specifically, but when I was younger, the family took a trip down to Maine to reminisce on my dad's college days. So I was pretty young. I don't remember a lot, but never Boston specifically, but I am looking forward to it.
Great. Dom, what you got?
Jack, I've been asked at least over 100 times, what is your nickname? And I said, when I talked to Jessica and we Corbett with the Generals and worked out having you on, I thought, I'm just going to let you tell everybody instead of letting the cat out of the bag. Everybody wants to know, what is your nickname?
Yeah, it's actually pretty standard. It's just Stud, you know, just, you know, a short abbreviation of my last name with an S at the end. It's a pretty common nickname to have in the hockey world, but it's pretty unique that it does start with Stud.
I can just picture Jack Edwards calling one of your games at the NHL level and coming up with several lines that are going to bring laughter to us when we're watching.
Yeah.
But I want to ask one other question, because Kurt brought up the under 18s. Now, you've been a Hockey Canada guy for the under 17s, the under 18s, and the Ivan Holinka. And you've actually done pretty well for yourself under a diverse number of coaches. How's that helped you playing with the best in the world and with and against your peers? And how has the diversity in the coaches helped you out over those times?
Yeah, Hockey Canada is a very professional organization, and it's always an honor to play for them. My first experience there was the under 17, and kind of just getting my feet wet with international play. But you know, being able to compete against the best in the world, it's fun. It's a great challenge, and it's always fun to be a part of. World Championships at the end of this year, it was quite the honor that I was entrusted with bringing over when the team was already two games in, and everyone was very welcoming there. It was a unique experience to do that, but, you know, rather than use an excuse about joining late, I just tried to do the best I could to perform. But, again, all three experiences, playing against the best in the world, it's been incredible.
And you did fairly well at all three tournaments, I might add.
Thank you.
Jack, if I could, I know this has been a lot based towards the Boston Bruins side of things, but for you personally, next year, the Oshawa Generals look like they are going to be a very good hockey club. There's been some real good youth added into that club, including yourself, and it looks like you guys are on a very quick rise. You turned from what was a veteran-laden team that was used to winning to a youthful team that's very quickly getting used to winning. Where do you see your junior team going next season?
I'm extremely excited with what we have in the locker room in Oshawa, as everyone else is a part of it. You know, I definitely think we could, you know, be a team that could be a favorite to, you know, potentially win the OHL or at least compete for it. So, you know, we are young. There's definitely some youth in our lineup, but, you know, I think the management has full trust in our youth, and you know, I think there's a lot of guys who are ready to make that next step from being a youth to being a veteran guy. So, you know, our 99, 2000, 98 group, our core group of guys, I think is really strong, and you know, I think it's strong enough to be competitors next year.
Well, so going back a little bit to the draft, and just curious, your pre-draft rankings. I'm interested in knowing if you were paying attention at all, or you had any kind of expectations on where you thought you might get picked, and then where the Bruins took you at 53. Was there any kind of surprise, or was that about where you thought you were going to go, Jack?
I've seen some of the rankings. I didn't try to pay too much attention to them. I don't think a lot of them were a fair representation of where I fit into the draft class. But personally, I knew my skills, and I knew, you know, what I was capable of. And you know, when it started to get around that 50, I was kind of at the edge of my seat, expecting, you know, the reality kind of checked in that I kind of need to be called soon. But you know, at the same time, there was that feeling that it could be a little bit later. But regardless, I was just happy to be selected and just be there in Chicago and enjoy the experience.
And what are you most looking forward to? You're going to go to Boston here after the 4th of July holiday. You're going to be a part of that development camp, which they'll tell you you're not competing for a job. They just want to get you inculcated into kind of the systems and start doing some drills and working with the coaches so that you can not only get familiar with the kind of things they do in Boston, but also get to meet some of your fellow Bruins prospects. So you'll have that experience in July. But then as an Oshawa General and an OHL draft pick, you'll be able to go to the main camp in September and meet some of these veterans that you've been reading about and watching and hearing about. What are you most looking forward to in terms of that experience? And are there any particular players in Boston that you're particularly just kind of thinking about going, wow, it's going to be really neat to, you know, be around them and watch them in action and see how they prepare themselves for a season?
You know, I brought up professionalism a couple times in this interview, and, you know, again, I'm pretty excited to go to Boston and see, you know, how professional the National Hockey League really is. I'm excited, you know, to learn new things, whether it's from the coaches or from the players I'm being around. I'm going there pretty open-minded, not a lot of expectations, just learning from the National Hockey League players and kind of taking things back that they taught me to Oshawa to try to make Oshawa a better place. But, you know, we've mentioned the crew connection of Kyle with my coach, so I'm looking forward to get on the ice with Tori, I guess, and, you know, play with them.
Now, did they, I'm sure they came up on the net and congratulated you when it all happened at some point, you know, not asking for any details because that's for you guys to do. But I mean, just, I imagine it's been a pretty exciting for you to have those kind of shared connections and now, you know, be looking at it at still the tender age of 18, having an opportunity to take the same ice with a guy that you've undoubtedly watched from afar, go from being a undrafted free agent to one of the star two-way defensemen in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, Tori's story is pretty remarkable. You know, he's been passed over in the draft and, you know, dealt with some adversity along the way. So, you know, it's definitely something, you know, I'm looking forward to talk to him about. And, you know, I've talked to the family, you know, post-draft, and, you know, they've really helped me with understanding what the process is going to be like. So can't thank them enough, but looking forward to talking to them at camp as well.
You know what else you have in common with Tori, Jack?
What's that?
You're both Three Amigos podcast veterans. He was our very first guest when we started having guests on this deal about a year ago. So now you have joined that exclusive company as well.
That's pretty interesting.
All right, guys, what do you say? We're over 20 minutes. Does anybody have anything else for Jack, or we should probably let him get back to getting ready for the adventures that await him? I'll leave it to my mates to close it out. But Jack, again, thank you so much for calling in and for joining us. I know a lot of Bruins fans are very excited for you. Again, you play the very style that the Bruins value. It's not difficult to understand why they took you where they did, and we're just looking forward to your development and your journey as you you know, go through this process and do what you can to make your attempt to get on the roster at some point, whenever that is. So again, thank you, and I'll turn it over to Dom and Reed one last time.
Jack, I just want to say, learning to become a professional is going to come pretty easy for you. You're already a professional both on and off the ice, from what I know of you. And I just want to welcome you to the Bruins. And I believe you're leaving Monday for Boston to head to development camp, and want to wish you the best of luck.
I'm going to echo that, Jack. Thanks for being on with us. Pleasure to get to talk to you. Best of luck in Boston. Best of luck this season in Oshawa. And when you roll into Hamilton, try to put one up on the highlight reel, and I'll give you a heck of a call to take to Boston with you.
All right. Thank you very much, guys, for having me.
All right, Jack. Safe travels, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks very much.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow, that was pretty something, wasn't it, guys?
Yeah, he's a great kid, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's clear they're drafting character and they're doing it right.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, we talk about JFK, you know, being a great fit for the third line. But, you know, it never hurts to keep developing options. And when you look at Jack, you know, he's a couple more years away. Saw him in Chicago. He's got that pretty thin build. He knows that was the first thing out of his mouth when people asked him what he needed to improve. Sounds like he's just, you know, raised right, has good realistic expectations. And again, a kid that that, you know, we have to remember Kyle Krug once cut a certain player named Mike Modano. So Kyle Krug is a pretty tough taskmaster, discerning of talent. And so I figure if you can play for him, you can probably play for anyone.
Yeah, definitely. The only knock that I have in reading the internet about the Stepnica pick, and, you know, is them calling it a safe pick. And we can say this about Mäkinen as well, but it depends on your definition of the safe pick. If you're talking about getting a defensive forward and that's not going to hurt you defensively, yeah, okay, it's a safe pick. But the kid has offensive potential. I mean,
oh yeah,
we saw it late in the season. I mean, he was an absolute beast in the playoffs. I just can't get on board with calling it a safe pick. This is a swing, and you know, it may not be a home run, but it could very well turn out to be a triple. You know, I just can't buy this safe pick thing that's going around.
Yeah, I don't have any time for it being called a safe pick either. I think he's very underrated in terms of his offensive potential. And you said it, Dom. We saw it in the playoffs. You saw it at the U18s. He has all the talent in the world. And if he puts it all together at the next level, he's going to be a very dangerous player.
Yeah, so on that note, let's talk about the Bruins draft. Sitting there at 18, they had choices. They had options. We're talking, you had someone like maybe a Christian Vesalainen you could have gone with, you know, at forward, who, you know, certainly you could have argued was the best player available or filled a need. Instead, they stayed with Finland, but they went with another defenseman, a left-shot defenseman, player who came with interesting pedigree, certainly someone who was well-regarded, but maybe was lost in the mix a little bit in some circles. I know in a couple of rankings he was up closer to 10, and others he was closer to 30. But regardless of what you think about him, Urho Vaakanainen is a Bruin now. So Reed, I know you've got a pretty strong positive opinion of Urho. Why don't you tell the listeners what they're in for potentially with this guy?
I love this pick. Urho Vaakanainen can absolutely flat out fly on skates. He is a tremendous skater, and he's already, you see, again, I've talked a lot, and I said it with Jack, you look at what they call the NHL size, and there are some guys that you throw it out the window for, like a Tori Krug, but Urho Vaakanainen is already just about at that point. 6'1", could top out around 6'2", 200 pounds. This is the kind of guy that can be dangerous at both ends of the rink. His gap control is some of the best that I was able to see out of defensemen in this draft class. And the only reason that he made it as far back as he did is because the offensive game hasn't quite come yet. But you take all the skills, the hockey IQ, and if you've seen him make a first pass out of his own zone, it is absolutely brilliant. He has the ability to bring that offensive game forward. His agents believe that he will. The Boston Bruins believe that he will. And that's good enough for me with the way that that team's been putting together their draft classes. I am very excited about Urho Vaakanainen.
Yeah, I wish I could share that high level of optimism. I'm going to take the wait-and-see approach. I've seen him. I think he's a good player. I don't know. Time will tell. I respect the process, and if he ends up being every bit as good as you've just laid out, then the Bruins could. I know they're not taking him thinking he was a safe guy. We don't have to worry about that. I mean, they're fully on board with your line of thinking in that that we have not seen the real Urho Vaakanainen, and that the 6 points he scored this past year, admittedly playing at the pro level, for a good team, didn't have I guess much ice time, and that impacts the production. Certainly, I think in Saipa we could be seeing a guy who's eating a lot of minutes, playing a top top two role for them, and the production could come. He's certainly a confident kid. I mean, he wasn't lacking for superlatives to describe his own game and play, and I didn't take it as he was being arrogant. I mean, he's just extremely, supremely confident. So that's good, but honestly, when I look at the depth chart, for wingers within the Boston Bruins organization, I just think that there were perhaps some other potential players that were on the board that might have been better choices at that spot. But hey, that's just me. It's just one opinion.
Kirk, not to jump in on you here, but I did agree with you right off the bat. I thought Christian Vesalainen was the guy that they were going to be doing cartwheels over, that he was still available at the pick. Because if they had taken Vesalainen, I would be just as excited as I am right now. And I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the offense, in that if he had played in the J20s, where you see a lot of the other European players that were drafted were in, you would have seen a lot more offense. You're exactly right. Because of the role he played on the team he played for, he did not get the kind of opportunity to be able to put those numbers up. In Saipa, if you've seen their roster and their depth chart, he is going to be playing a top two role next season. And I think that's where you're really going to get an idea of what Urho Vaakanainen will look like.
Yeah.
You know, guys, I'm going to take this in a different route, because we're starting to see the fruits come to fruition in what Finland's doing. And we already know that they've been producing top-notch goaltending for years. But back in 2009-2010, Finland took a different route when it comes to coaching kids. And by kids, I mean 10 to 14-year-olds. And they did what no other country in the world, to my knowledge, does. And they hired coaches to coach these kids in that age group between 10 and 14. I think they hired like 40 coaches just strictly to coach these kids and teach skills. That was their primary role. And we're seeing it come out of Finland is players that utilize their skills to a max, having been coached with great coaching, I might add, at such an early age. I think what we're going to start seeing come out of Finland is more and more and more talent. Out of a country of 5 million people, they're doing better than most. That said, I agree with a lot of what Reed said, and a bit of with what you said, Kirk. I don't think it's a safe pick. I think that the offensive talent is there, but what is happening to him now, or has in 2 years, is playing against pros. He's learned that defensive game and will continue to learn it. And we know that for defensemen making it to the NHL, it's the defensive game that they have to learn. That it doesn't come naturally to them by the time that they're at the NHL level.
Okay. No, I mean, like I said, good pick. I had him in my Bruins draft preview, just not at the 18th spot. It was a little surprising. There were some guys that really surprised me, like the Ryan Poehlings. I thought for sure, you know, a guy like Ryan Poehling would be appealing to them. He drops all the way to 25. So at the end of the day, I think you look at what they're trying to do. They're trying to build balance on both sides of their defense. You can never have, you know, it's the old adage, you can never have too many good defensemen. If you get these extra assets in there and turn it into an internal competition, that allows the GM to have the flexibility to move some of those assets out, and that they'll be sought after. Teams will actually want to trade for them and give something up of value. I mean, it's always risky business when you're trading for unknown or lesser-known quantities for NHL talent. But the Bruins staff, I mean, I talked to Scott Bradley afterwards, and, you know, they believe in this guy, so we'll run with it. I don't think it was a quote-unquote reach. You know, certainly, I mean, if you're looking at Redline Report, Redline had him lower, but that's just one view. He was the 8th-ranked European skater, so 18 is certainly respectable. in that regard. Other scouting services like McKean's and Hockey Prospect had him at 13 and 11, respectively. So there's no way people can call this a reach. He just wasn't as known an entity, and I think that's because he just keeps things relatively simple. And you know, when you go back to, you know, what do you want in a defenseman? A guy who doesn't maybe stand out all the time, and you know, not everyone can be Charlie McAvoy. So I'm down with it. I just you know, again, I'm trying to be a little more measured and just kind of say, hey, we'll see where it takes us. But you know, he's good. He looks like a good player, and certainly the size and the skating mean that he's going to be playing. It's now just a matter of, you know, how good is he going to be? That'll be fun to find out.
If I can just tell you guys a bit of a funny note that just reminded me of when Kirk was talking about what do you want out of a defenseman. And as I've said before, especially with you guys, I grew up playing defense. And I was lucky enough that my dad was one of my coaches for a long time as I was coming up through the ranks. And my dad, if nothing else, was a realist. He was always supportive, so I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. But when I was about 13 or 14, he sat me down and said, you know, you're never going to be Bobby Orr. So what is it that a defenseman in your position, at your size, with your skill set can do? And he said, 90% of the game, if you're not noticed, it means you're doing exactly what you should be doing. The other 10%, whether it's power play or jumping into the rush, make yourself a star. That kind of reminds me of what we're thinking about with Urho Vaakanainen.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Jack Studnicka. I don't know that there's a whole lot more to say other than this is classic Bruins type player versus value. You get a guy who's surging at the right time. He started out with pretty high hopes. The production wasn't there, but as you said, Reed, I think it was you, Reed, wasn't that was talking about the trades that were made, or was it Dom?
That was Dom.
Okay. Dom was talking about Cirelli being moved out and veterans being moved out, and then he responds the way you need him to in terms of he amps up the production. He ends up being the leading scorer in the playoffs. He goes to the under-18s, does well there. So he's trending in the right direction. You always want that guy. Maybe he's rated a little lower at the beginning in the middle part of the season, and his quote-unquote stock or ranking hasn't quite caught up to where his draft position ends up. But when you look at it, he's trending upwards to end the season versus the guy that starts hot and then goes cold and finishes on a down note. So in that regard, I think the Bruins did very well. He seems like a Bruins-type player and guy. And, boy, if you believe in the kinds of things he's been able to do, he certainly looks like someone that will definitely be making his mark in Boston at some point down the line.
And this appears to be where the Bruins are kind of going with their selections. Look back to when they take Zach Sinishin in the first round, and a pick that was panned by a lot of critics immediately. And what have we seen Sinishin do since? Back-to-back 40-goal seasons in the OHL. Now, I'm not saying that Studnicka and Sinishin are the same players, but what I am getting at is the fact that the Bruins seem to be finding guys where they're jumping on at just the right time. They haven't totally broken out just yet, but you see all the tools there, and your natural instinct would be to say, okay, all the tools are there, the toolbox is there. Next thing that happens is they're going to find their breakout. It happened with Sinishin at the junior level, not pro yet. It happened with Brusque in a lot of ways, especially in terms of hockey IQ and his 200-foot game, and I feel like that's where they kind of jumped in with Jack as well.
Dominic?
Not much to add to that. Definitely, you know, he's got all the skills, the skating's there, he's got the right mentality, he has the IQ, he has the vision. I brought up the shooting question to him because I really do want to see him shoot more. I think his shot is very, very underrated. He's got a tremendous backhand. I would honestly put it top 10, if not top 5, backhand shot in the OHL. I just want to see him utilize it more. And I think he understands that it's a tool that he has in his arsenal that he does need to use more.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, let's talk about the next guy on the list, and that's Jeremy Swayman. Fourth round, 111th overall, 6'2" goalie from Alaska, played with the Sioux Falls Stampede, put up really good numbers considering that he was more than 10 games under 500 in his win-loss record playing for one of the poorer USHL clubs a season ago. Headed to the University of Maine this year, talked to different people, including his goalie coach. General thought is that, you know, he is a raw but intriguing project. He can really play, has all of the fluid agility and real good hands, which is important for the modern goaltender, and able to be, you know, in terms of being able to not just block pucks but direct them out of danger areas, whether you're catching them cleanly to get your face off when you're under pressure, or you're using your blocker to funnel pucks into the corners where you can give your defense and your team a chance to regain puck possession, as opposed to kicking those shots right back out into the danger areas where the other team's forwards are lurking and waiting for secondary scoring chances. Just seems to have that kind. You know, he wasn't a household name, and I talked about it earlier, where, you know, some of these goalies, you know, whether we're talking, you know, Caden Primo or Keith Petrozelli, it's such an interesting draft year where a guy like Swayman, because of maybe where he was playing, was kind of overlooked a bit. But when you go back and I consulted my notes from having seen him a few times, and he was good. Like he had a B plus and an A start for me. So it's going to be interesting to see how Swayman does. He's very raw at this stage. He's going to take some time, and it's probably going to be a bit of a roller coaster. He's one of these goalies sometimes where he's going to go through stretches where he plays really well, but then he'll have some setbacks, and I think fans just have to be patient and remember, you know, when you look at Zane McIntyre and how long it has taken him to work his way into the mix, you have to allow for that, and just every goalie develops on a slightly different timeline. I know you guys aren't all that familiar with him, but based on what you've seen, I'm interested in your thoughts about Swayman and his potential.
Well, I've honestly tried to find video, and I haven't been able to find any. Kirk, so I've got no knowledge of him whatsoever, but I will tell you what I don't like, and it has nothing to do with the player himself, is the Bruins coming out and saying they targeted another goalie, but he was picked, and I just don't think that's something that you should come out and publicly say, because, you know, it makes him sound like an also-ran. And talking to some people, I don't think he's an also-ran. But you do have to raise some questions when, you know, they've now invited Stephen Dillett from the Niagara Ice Dogs development camp for the second time. Questions about what's going to happen with Malcolm Subban now that you could potentially be bringing two other goaltenders into the mix. But other than that, I really can't speak to Swayman himself.
I don't have a whole lot of direct knowledge of Swayman either. I like everything that I've read about him. I'm in the same boat as Dom. I really haven't been able to find much of any video on him. It sounds like he's got the tools. It sounds like he's got sort of a projectable game moving forward. But again, I agree with Dom in that you see what the Bruins are doing in goal, and it looks more and more to me like Malcolm Subban is not going to be a part of the plan moving forward. And you see Zane McIntyre's there, Stephen Dillon, who Dom, I believe, can be signed to a contract this time around, and I wouldn't be upset if the Bruins decided to do that, from seeing him play tremendously well in the OHL last season. And then you've got Dan Vladas, too, who kind of reminds me of the Swayman pick in a way, and that a little bit of a project moving forward. But again, it takes goaltenders a while to get to that point. We know Tuukka Rask isn't going to be around forever. And even if you, like I do, think Zane McIntyre will become a number one, you still need to have somebody behind him. So I can't argue with the pick.
Yeah. No, he's Yeah, he's certainly an interesting proposition. Just because his dad, I guess, is 6'6". So if you believe that, you know, he just turned 18 in November, and if you believe he's got some growing to do, he's 6'2 now. You know, he could end up being 6'3", 6'4", before it's all said and done. So, again, you know, he's one of these players they're drafting. They're going to put him in the bank. We knew the Bruins needed to add at least a goalie in this draft with one of their six picks. They did. In my mind, there was the potential to maybe add a name guy. They could have had Petruzzelli in the second. I was really surprised he fell all the way down to the end of the third from what I heard from different sources. Petruzzelli didn't, you know, he's like the inverse of what I was talking about with Studnicka, in that he trended down at the end of the season after being really, you know, starting strong and his stock being really high. He finished rough in the, had a tough playoff, and then he didn't apparently test well at the combine, right? So teams might have been scared off by that. I don't know. It's hard to say. But Petruzzelli, I think, was a real fine value pick for the Detroit Red Wings at 88 overall. But the Bruins could have had him at 53, but, you know, it's not hard to figure out why they were enamored with Jack after you talk to him. So no issues there. It's one more goalie in the stable. We'll see where Swayman takes them. One NHL scout who is very familiar with him told me that he can be a little impatient. He gets over-aggressive. I know in one situation this year, he was trying to score a goal. His team had a one-goal lead late, and the other team had pulled their goalie, and he went for the goal. He tried to score the goal shot, and it was knocked down, and the team put it in the net and tied the game. And there was a conversation with him about, hey, was that a smart play there? You know, to be going for the goal when you're up, you know, when you're up by one. You know, maybe be a little more patient. You know, don't do the risky play and just, you know, stay in your net and make the shot, you know, versus trying to do the self-identified scoring play, which as a goalie is really not that important in the grand scheme of things. So that was one observation that was shared with me. That's not to say he's a selfish kid or, you know, he's not going to learn from that. But I think from what I've heard, Swayman is malleable and pliable and willing to learn. After that, we had another gap with the fifth round, no picks, and then they took Cedric Parra, St. John, helped them win a championship, and surprisingly, shockingly, when you look at the picture I took of him, I mean, he looks like a blend between Patrice Bergeron and Ryan Spooner.
I honestly thought you superimposed one over the other and put that out there. It's just, the similarities are unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you guys know about this kid?
Our friend Craig Eagles wrote a nice article about it the other day. And people that are looking for it can find it on my Twitter feed. And, you know, it's the interesting thing about him, the Nicka pick, he's the second of three CHLers they took this year. And we talked about it on our last podcast that last year they were the only team who didn't select anybody from the CHL. And I think the word you used, Kirk, is it's cyclical when it comes to this. And I think what we're seeing here with the three CHL picks are players who, if they hit what their ceiling is, are closer to making it to the NHL. I know he had limited ice time in St. John's simply because of the death of the team that went to a Memorial Cup. But what I saw of him at the Memorial Cup, I liked. I mean, he's a good skater. He's got decent size. I think he's like 6'2", 6'3", and over 200 pounds. But really, I didn't get to see enough of him. But what I did, I liked the potential that I saw him.
Yeah, I think we're on the right track with these kind of guys. Parra, again, I'm in the same boat as Dom, in that we don't in Ontario get to see as much of the Quebec League as we would probably like to. But everything that I saw out of them, especially at the Memorial Cup, looked promising. 2 goals there in 4 games, playing in a limited role. And he's another guy that he's got some skills. We don't know a ton about him just yet, but like Sinishin was in the season the Bruins drafted him, he was stuck as a young player in a limited role. And as next season comes around, you're going to see him be essentially forced to step into the next level up in terms of production on his team. He was a first-round pick by St. John in the QMJHL draft. So there's obviously something there to him that scouts believe he can do more than, I believe, it was 16 points this season in 64 games. So I'm very excited to see what he develops into. But this is a pick that I don't think I'm going to have a real opinion on until a year, maybe 2 years down the road.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think the big thing with him is he was on a veteran-laden team, so he was a lower-line guy. He's got that big body. The general thinking is that he's going to get an opportunity to play more of a top-six role for the Sea Dogs, and we'll just see how it does. I mean, it's an interesting selection in that, you know, it's Perret seems to have the kind of things that the Bruins value. They like his skating. I heard from several sources that his skating is a bit of an issue and is holding him back. I guess we'll find out. We'll see.
He'll get second line duty in St. John's next year, Kurt.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's what I'm being told, right? But until we actually see it, you know, again, we can sit here and talk in June about, you know, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. I mean, again, I got it, but let's see it. See it, and assuming he isn't traded or moved in the offseason to, you know, somewhere else, that should be the way it is. I mean, we're talking about a sixth-round pick in a quote-unquote weak draft. So, you know, if he ends up being a bottom two-line kind of guy and ends up developing into that kind of player, you know, more power to him. I am not sure he's going to be much more than that, but you never know. So where are we at next? We've got the last two seventh-rounders to talk about, right? I'm going to let Reed take Victor Berglund because I know you're probably champing at the bit to do this, aren't you, my friend?
Oh, not only am I champing at the bit about this, this happens to be a young man off my favorite team in Sweden, in Modo. And one of the reasons I got into Swedish hockey was watching that team out of Örnsköldsvik that produced some unbelievable talent over the years. Naslund, Forsberg, the Sedin twins, Oland. The list goes on and on. Victor Berglund is the kind of player that if he becomes what he could be, then it's a home run for a seventh-round pick. He's a very smooth skater, very smart kid, good first pass, good gap control like we were talking about with Vakanainen. One of the big drawbacks for Berglund right now is he's about 165 pounds. So he's going to have to fill out the frame. He's going to have to get stronger. And he's going to have to continue his development curve. His numbers weren't eye-catching this year in either the J20 or the Allsvenskan, but the talent is there. And for Modo specifically, they're going to need a player like Victor Berglund to step up if they want to get themselves out of the Allsvenskan and back into the SHL through promotion. He's a kid that's going to be trusted maybe not this season coming up, but certainly 2 seasons from now, with a much larger role on the senior team in Modo. So, again, like talking about Perret, this is a project pick. But if all the pieces work out, it could be a very good project pick.
I'll agree with everything Reed said, everything that I've heard and read about him, and the potential to be a home run hit. The good thing is being drafted out of Europe, the Bruins don't have to rush, so they can afford a project pick here. They've got 4 years before they have to sign him. Let him develop. Let him take his time. But this isn't going to be somebody walking through the door in 2 or 3 years. If they're patient, take their time, extend it out to the 4 years, then they'll see what they have in them.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, I know nothing. I even tweeted out at the time. Couldn't help anyone other than knowing that he was the 109th European selected. I know Scott Bradley cited all three Swedish scouts in the organization were very high on him. He said they were, quote-unquote, pounding the table for him, which is, you know, which is good. That's what you want. There could be something there. Wouldn't, you know, every year, no matter how good or how not good a draft is, there's always a player or two that come out of left field as players who weren't ranked, weren't highly touted. We have to remember Christopher Stieg in 2004 wasn't even ranked by Central Scouting. And yet, you know, talk about a guy who's made a pretty decent NHL career out of just being a forward who can do just enough and contribute just enough offense to be a sought-after commodity year after year. And here's a guy that Central didn't even have on their list. The Bruins took him in the mid-rounds, and he goes on to have a pretty fair NHL career. Berglund could be that kind of player because he certainly seems to have the talent and the hockey sense. It's just as Reed said, his frame is an issue, and so he'll get to work on that. The Bruins will put him on the strength and conditioning program, and who knows, in a few years, he might be like Emil Johansson coming over at the end of the season and impressing a lot of people. And you know, you don't want to count these guys out, even if they might not be these sexy, higher-ranked picks. The Bruins could really be onto something if you trust those three Swedish scouts that they have.
And a last point on Berglund as well, and this is one of the reasons why I do trust the Swedish scouts' judgment on him, Kirk, is that he is directly from Örnsköldsvik. You don't get to play for that hometown club with that kind of pressure in Sweden for Modo unless you've got something to offer that team. Because that is not, believe it or not, it's not a big city. It's a tough market to play in, especially if you're a hometown kid, because they have had a history of success there and a history of breeding great players. They're getting a little restless over there. So for them to keep the hometown boy, they see something special in him.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, you know, again, you know, at that point, does it really matter if you're taking a name player or not? You know, you take a player. It's the thing that I've tried to say over and over again when we get into these draft discussions with fans that are asking. That is, you know, take the player you like where you like him. And so at 195 overall, why not? I mean, he certainly, when you read about him and what the team's talking about, he sounds like he could be a player. And if he's not, he wouldn't be the first, and he certainly won't be the last early seventh rounder to not reach the NHL. It's a worthy shot to take, in my view. That segues us out to the last pick of the Bruins, and that is Czech defenseman Daniel Bukac, who was out playing for the Brandon Wheat Kings this past season. If Victor Berglund is the smallish, ultra offensive skill guy potential, Bukac is the opposite. He's more of a, and I don't like to use player comparisons, but to give people kind of a frame of mind, he's more like a Milan Jurčina, you know, a late round pick, but big, you know, long reach. More of a defensive defenseman, but has a little ability to move the puck, I'm told. And Redline really liked him. He was in the top 100 for the Redline scouting service. Not everyone had him there, but certainly seems like a decent value guy to take a shot at with your last pick in the final round.
Well, he's a giant. He's the kind of guy. I'm 11 years older than him, and if I saw him in the hallway in an arena, I'd probably call him sir. This is a humongous young defenseman that is going to, again, we talked about Berglund having to put on weight. I think Bukac is 6'4", 6'5", and about 185 pounds. So obviously, if he's going to play the pro game, he's going to have to add quite a bit of weight to his frame and quite a bit of muscle and strength. But again, this is the kind of guy that you've got picks in the seventh round. Try to take a shot for somebody that's got an exciting sort of skill set. And maybe this isn't exciting in the traditional way of putting up points, but he could be a lot of fun to watch in his own zone, just going around and knocking people on their pants. This is the kind of guy that the Bruins organization has traditionally loved. And from what I understand, he's a very good skater for his size and for the physicality that he brings. It's a nice blend. So we hope for the best with Bukac, and we're just going to have to wait to see if everything kind of lines up for him.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of him you know, watching some Brandon games on television when they were available. He's going to be a defensive defenseman, but with a butt there. He's one of those that will make the safe play to clear the zone. Now, he is a good skater. You know, he's not an excellent skater, but he can skate. But more than likely, you're going to see him make that clear, crisp pass out of the zone rather than try and skate it himself. He doesn't dump it off the glass and get it out and turn it over. He's not that type of guy. I think once he does add that muscle and that weight that Reed talked about, he'll be super effective at knocking bodies around, putting players through boards, so to speak. Will clear the front of the net. Very active stick. His stick positioning is great. It seemed like it was always on the ice and always in position to take away passes or get in front of shots. But he's not going to be the flashy in the usual rack up points kind of guy.
Good deal. Well, I think that probably does it on the NHL draft. I think overall the Bruins did fine. They have a lot of prospects in the system. They added more. This allows Don Sweeney to maybe be able to offer up some more bankable players that are maybe closer to being ready for the show, but maybe he assesses as not having really a chance to break in with Boston, but might be appealing while still resetting the organization and adding to the depth. Again, when you're not picking at the top, you know, early, it's hard to get those really high-end, sexy guys. I think certainly Vesalainen might have been one that you could, you know, hold up depending on how he does going forward, but they didn't take him. But maybe Vakanainen is going to have that same kind of effect as he plays in Saipa, and I know Reed has felt pretty strong. So I think overall it's a solid draft. I'm not into grading drafts right after the fact because so much can happen. I'll let other people grade it, but I think that the touchstone and the watchword for this draft is value. The Bruins kind of stayed within, you know, what they look for, what they like. They stayed true to themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, draft Knicks that are looking to bring sexy back might not like it, and certainly Kyler Yamamoto would have generated a lot of buzz had they taken him at 18, but they didn't, and I don't have a major issue with the guys they did take. So that's my take, and unless you guys have something else to add, I thought we could close out the podcast by kind of giving a preview on what we might be in for as July 1st comes around, and talk about maybe some of the guys we've been hearing linked to the Bruins as potential free agent signings.
I'm with you on what you said there, Kirk, but you know, fans will always try and say, where does this guy fit? This isn't like a year ago where the three of us sat here in one of our podcasts and said, Charlie McAvoy automatically becomes the Bruins' number one prospect. And I see them ranking prospects now in the Bruins system, you know, days within the draft. Where does Vakanainen fit in? Where does Stetnik fit in? I mean, I saw one today that, you know, as an example, now has Stetnik ahead of Zachary Sinishin as in terms of the pecking order for prospects. This isn't that type of draft. There's no Charlie McAvoy here where it's an automatic that you can pretty much say that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like I said, in my rankings, I always try to break out the pro and the amateur guys. So you'll be happy to know, Dom, that Stetnik is not on the level playing field with Sinishin because I've moved Zach over to the pro side. But man, if you look at my list, it is so balanced toward the pro side. I've got a top 30, but 20 of them are on the pros, and there's only 10 on the amateur side because so many of these guys are now graduating over to the pro side this year for the coming season. And it's a pretty remarkable breakdown. But again, expecting to have 18-year-old Stutnika you know, compared to, you know, 21, 22-year-olds or 20-year-olds. Just they're ahead in the development. I'm just trying to keep it real. But, yeah, it's always there's always that post-shiny new toy buzz where you get the the new guys, you know, getting those bounces up in high in the rankings because they're new. And, you know, who knows, Jack might keep climbing up the ranks, but I think for now we can kind of just let it play out. Reed, let's get you to take us into our next segment so that we can wrap up here and move on. And hope people have enjoyed the podcast so far, but we've got free agency around the corner. And what do you think maybe might be some realistic options for the Bruins in the next couple days?
Oh boy. This is an interesting summer if there's ever been one, because where the Bruins are, there's so much young talent coming up. And yet you can see a couple of spots where you could plug a left wing in, you could plug a left shot defenseman in, and be a little bit happier with how things look overall. I've been a big proponent of Jyrki Okipaka for quite some time, and he was not qualified by the Ottawa Senators. I think he'd be a really nice fit in that third pairing left defense, playing next to what I would believe would be Kevin Miller on his right. Up front, I'm not entirely sure where they're going to go. I mean, obviously, and I've said it on Twitter, and I was having a little bit of fun with it overall, but they talked about at one time the Bruins contacting Phil Thornton, and wouldn't that be some kind of narrative to write itself? Will that happen? I doubt it. I don't think they would go for what would be a three-year deal with Joe Thornton, although I certainly wouldn't argue Seton come back on a one or a two. Some of the names that weren't qualified stand out: Ty Ratty, Mikhail Grigorenko, maybe. Niall Yakupov might be an interesting one to consider, not necessarily run out and sign. And again, on defense, Patrick Wiercutch. He's a guy that I've always had a lot of time for. I think the Bruins need to go maybe, shall we say, bargain hunting a bit more, as opposed to jumping out and signing David Backes like they did a year ago.
Sounds good to me. I've seen Trevor Daly's name mentioned as a player that the Bruins are interested in. General consensus, though, reading the tea leaves, is that there's a good chance other teams will probably jump up and outbid them. We have to look at their cap situation, what the dollars they have. This is where we rely on Dom because he's so savvy with this stuff. But, you know, on the open market, what you're going to pay for a guy like Trevor Daly, who no doubt a serviceable defenseman, two-time Stanley Cup champion with the Pittsburgh Penguins the last two seasons, and, you know, is a solid veteran presence. But, you know, when you get to the open market, the prices seem to get out of whack to lure these guys. So unless the Bruins could get a discount with him, which probably not likely, I would be surprised if they come out on top of the bidding if they are in fact on him. Dom, what are you hearing about Daly?
I absolutely believe that Daly is the target. I don't believe that Kevin Shattenkirk is. Shattenkirk is going to be a lot more expensive than Daly is, and the term is going to be outrageous for the Bruins. And cap wise, he's not going to work. But I see people saying that the cap is going to hinder their opportunity to bring Daly in, but I beg to differ, because to bring Daly in or any other defenseman that's going to cost you into that $4 million range, one of Adam McQuaid or Kevin Miller is going to have to be moved. In terms of contract or dollars on the cap and the roster spot, you're not going to pay up to $3 million to have a guy sitting upstairs. So I think before the Bruins go all in and sign that defenseman, they're going to have a deal in place to move somebody else out on defense. And if I were a betting man, I would bet that it would be Adam Quaid before Kevin Miller.
Yeah, well, probably so. Interesting. Flames just picked up Eddie Lack as part of that deal. Ryan Murphy, the famous Ryan Murphy of the, you know, Kitchener Rangers, Ryan Murphy was part of that deal. So they head to Calgary for let's see what is that, and it's got 50% retention of salary, and the Canes are getting Keegan Kanzig and 2019 sixth rounder. Very interesting.
Isn't that funny though? Because if you go back to that draft, Kirk, it was is it Dougie Hamilton or is it Ryan Murphy? And now they're on the same team.
Now they're on the same team. How about that? And I firmly believe the Bruins were in fact looking at if Dougie Hamilton wasn't there, they were going to try to pick up Ryan Ellis, and if they couldn't pick up Ryan Ellis, then they were going to take Ryan Murphy. But how do people feel now after watching Ryan Ellis go all the way to the Stanley Cup Final? Would he have been in terms of a pickup for the Bruins? It's just so interesting to revisit these things, but
years later, exactly.
Yeah, but So Flames have now gone out and gotten a couple goalies here since the end of the season, and so
we'll open their back line too.
Yeah. So we'll see what else is what other moves are afoot. But I think I really don't see the Bruins doing too much. I do believe that a trade or series of trades have got to happen because there's just too much of a logjam right now. And we've talked about this. The three of us have discussed it before. I mean, you only have a finite number of contracts, and at some point you have to make decisions on your young guys. And if they're being blocked and it doesn't look like they're going to get anywhere, then you got to move them while you can, and you can get value because you run the risk the longer you hold them, the longer, you know, the less value they have. And then you've got, so I don't envy Don Sweeney's situation right now. I'm sure he's working phones and is doing a lot of groundwork. But as we get closer to Saturday, like you said, if you want to be in on Trevor Daley, then probably some kind of domino's got to fall so that they have that flexibility to be able to commit the dollars it would take if they're serious about bringing him in. And it sounds
like, guys, take this as you will, but there's a rumor going around right now. Trevor Daley has apparently followed the Bruins on Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means anything, but you know, this is like one of those things where I start to feel old because the kids are all talking about the Instagram. Right. And I have no idea.
I heard that might be a fake Instagram account though. So without knowing for sure whether it is actually his official Instagram or someone created it and then did it, I mean, who knows? But I saw that rumor as well, and then I saw some chatter about, well, it might be a fake Instagram and it might not actually be Trevor Daley's, but.
Oh, yeah. Great. Did I just report fake news on the Three Amigos?
No, you certainly were talking about breaking social media trends, and that is perfectly okay because people are talking about it. Trevor Daley is trending in Boston right now. So again,
another name that Reed brought up that I would take a one-year flyer on a prove-it deal is Yakupov.
Yeah.
I know you're not the biggest fan of him, Kirk, but...
Wow. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, if it looks like a duck and it waddles like one and it quacks like one, it probably is. I mean, you know, I guess you can. It's just you wonder if a guy can't make it work with the two teams he's been given opportunities with, I mean, what makes you think the third time's the charm? But I guess the right deal, the right situation, why not? I just would have a hard time seeing the Bruins, you know, going after him and committing to him and giving him that chance. But, hey, you know what? The more the merrier, I guess. If it happens, it would certainly be an intriguing swing for the fences type of move for sure.
Him and Pastrnak on the ice together at some point could be exciting.
Now, what about that rumor that wasn't it Mr. McKenzie that said that the Bruins and Pastr were closing in on a 6x6 extension? Or was
that's
that
beautiful
news as well?
If they get him for $6 million, they're laughing to the bank.
Yeah.
They're laughing to the bank.
I mean, there's just a lot of talk when you look at like what McDavid, you know, and now you've got Draisaitl in Edmonton, allegedly asking for $10 million or thereabouts. And I'm telling you, man, this salary structure, it's really going to be interesting to see how this all plays out with these young guys the next couple of years, because when you look at the extension that Brad Marchand signed, teams have to be cognizant of what they're giving to their real bell cows. And you have to be careful, that there's always that chance that you upset the apple cart a little bit in terms of salary structure, and people get bent out of shape if you have to give too much to the younger guys. It just all seems like it happens quickly, that from that first contract to the second contract, and the money just escalates. And in a guy like Connor McDavid, you can certainly understand it. But I just wonder what kind of second, third order ripple effects that Connor McDavid deal and extension is going to have, not just for Edmonton, but around the league.
Well, and without trying to get too deep into this as well, you look around and you see a lot of people comparing it to, you look at what some of the top stars in basketball make. Yeah, but you can have three guys in basketball making a significant portion of your team's salary cap and still win. In hockey, you need 20 guys on the ice every night rolling the ball the same direction. And if you commit too much money to too many guys in spots, now I don't think Connor McDavid falls under this, but you've got to be careful for your Edmonton when you look at what you're going to have to give McDavid, what you've signed Russell to, what you've signed Sekera to, what you signed Lucic to, and then what some of your other young players are going to commit.
Dreisaitl. I mean, Dreisaitl's due, and he's asking for 10.
You're running into trouble.
If that's true. But, oh, my goodness,
The problem is this, guys, and it's going to be a huge bone of contention in the next CBA talks. Mark my words, the NHL is going to be fighting for a cap on second contracts. But when you break down the McDavid contract, I don't have a problem with it because percentage wise of the cap or what the team paid, McDavid is at 17.6% of the Oilers cap. Sidney Crosby's second contract was 17.3% of the Pens cap. Only Alex Ovechkin was higher. The problem isn't McDavid's. It's the percentage of the cap that those secondary guys are making. Not the Connor McDavid's, not the Sidney Crosby's, but the next tier of players.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. Well, guys, it's been a lot of fun. Can't get enough of this, and I really appreciate you guys. Full credit to Mr. Tiano for making the Jack Studnicka interview happen. He laid the groundwork with the Oshawa Generals, and not surprisingly, they came through. Hey, it's Oshawa after all. You guys know I have a bit of a bias there. And again, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that the very first question I asked him in Chicago was about that great tradition between the Boston Bruins and Oshawa Generals, beginning, of course, with the great Bob Orr, and going on to other great Bruins like Rick Middleton and Terry O'Reilly, Wayne Cashman, and more recently, Nathan Horton and Sean Thornton. How about that? And I did see Thornton at the draft. It was great to see him and congratulate him on his gig with the Florida Panthers. Great guy as always. And I know fans and we all wish there was some way he could have come back to Boston in some kind of capacity. But one of the good guys in hockey. And then, of course, we can't forget Mark Recchi being elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Absolutely well done, Rex. Just a true, I think, a true top performer in the sport, and one of the original little engines that could, who was looked over and snubbed so many years in the draft, was finally taken by Pittsburgh as an afterthought and went on to have a pretty darn fine NHL career. Just got his fifth Stanley Cup ring. Three as a player, two as a member of the Penguins organization in a player development capacity. So all the best to Rex. And, of course, Jeremy Jacobs, also named in the building category, and Dave Andrechuk. So three with Bruins connections. What do you guys think about the recent news and anything you want to say before we sign off?
Well, Mark Recchi, first of all, will always have a place at my table, so to speak. 2011 does not happen without Mark Recchi. And I've said it before, that's one of the greatest moments. That's right up there with proposing to my fiance in terms of the great moments of my life, getting to watch my dad cry as the Bruins lift the Stanley Cup for the first time since 1972. That was a moment I'll never forget. And Dave Vanderchuk, about darn time, from my hometown. I'm sitting right now talking to you guys from about 5 minutes down the road from the Dave Vanderchuk Arena on Hamilton Mountain. So it's great to see him finally get his call, well-deserved. And, of course, guys, I always love doing this. Thanks so much for putting it together for us, Dom. And, Kirk, thanks for getting the technical side of this worked out for us.
It's my pleasure, boys. And I'll echo everything about Vanderchuk and Recky. Two well-deserving entries into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Jeremy Jakes, say what you want with him, but, you know, he was a driving force behind the salary cap. Fans may not like it, but for the most part, it's been, I don't want to say a godsend to hockey, but it's changed the game for somewhat the better, and I have no problem with JJ being inducted in the builders category.
Well, okay. Well, guys, again, it's been a real pleasure to have this, to have you guys back with us, and we'll have to do this again sometime. And on that note, we're going to let it go. It's a pretty long podcast, so if you're still with us, we're glad for that opportunity, and take care, everyone. Until the next time, this is the Three Amigos, Reed Duffy, Dominic Tiano, Kirk Lukey, signing off. Have a good one.